Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. It's the Where's Waldo edition of it. Bob, guess where I am?
Matt, I have no clue. It sounds like, okay, can I guess?
Yeah.
All right. You're outside.
Yes.
You're not on remote.
No.
You're not at the cottage, because that's too obvious. I'm going to say you're at Woodbine Racetrack.
No, you should have gone with the obvious one. I'm at the cottage, day drinking. I was done my show at 10 a.m., and we went for a run afterwards and just had lunch. We had flatbreads, and now it's time for the podcast.
All right. So how cut are you?
Oh, no, no. It's like a glass and a half. And that's with a ton of water because it's a hot day here and flatbread. So, you know, you got all the carbs helping you out.
I think I might pour myself a glass of wine. That sounds kind of nice. You taught me about New Zealand and the Marlborough area.
Yeah. Yeah. Their Pinots are great.
Yeah. And it's a nice, light, summery wine.
Yes. 100%.
I buy one called, I think it's called Oyster Bay. No, it's not called Oyster Bay. Or is it?
Yeah, Oyster Bay. Or Villa Maria. Trying to think of some of the Stoneleigh. Those would be some of the ones. Nautilus. Those are the ones you get at the LCBO.
Ooh, the Tokyo Olympics have started, and I don't want to talk about them per se, but maybe, are there any good Japanese wines?
No, at least none that I've had. But it doesn't mean they don't exist. But I imagine there's only a small amount that's made, and it's rare. Something like that is not going to be imported because there's not going to be much of a market for Japanese wine, unless you're the real sort of hardcore wine type.
I've asked you about sake in the past, and you've punted. You've said there are other people who know way more than you do. So we'll just have to leave the Olympics where they are.
But I do know Chinese wine. I do know Chinese red wine.
Okay, well, bust one out. Bust one out. Let's hear.
Yeah, I can't pronounce the name of it, but it does exist. That was a horrible 15 seconds by me. Anyway,
well, that was very helpful, Matt. Thank you.
Not at all. Not even a little bit. But how are you? Where are you?
I'm at home. I'm in the office. Everything's good. Just getting ready for the weekend. It's Friday. We've got the draft tonight. That's always fun. I don't know anything about any of the players. And the Leafs don't have a first rounder. So I'm not exactly getting nachos out for this one.
No.
But it's a fun night. It's a big night. What I'm really hoping for, what I'm watching for, and I'll probably follow it more on Twitter than on TV, is will there be any draft day deals? Will there be anything on the floor? And I feel like the Leafs have so many questions around them that anything's possible. So we'll see. We'll see.
The thing is, I got to tell you, I'm really underwhelmed in terms of the Maple Leafs when it comes to this offseason because they've got the double whammy of no salary cap and no draft picks, nor do they have that sexy guy ready to come up from the Marlies that you could flip for something like. Like you talk about me punting on my sake conversation or trying to tell you the name of the Chinese wine that I've had. That's actually pretty good. They do their Bordeaux blend. It's not bad there. It's an up-and-coming region, or country, I should say. There is a region. I forget the name as well. But it's the same thing here. The Leafs are sort of punting on this off-season. Like, what can they do that's going to wow you?
Well.
Exactly.
Judging by Kyle Dubas yesterday, he's already preparing people for an off-season where not a ton happens. And they basically run it back. I caught a little bit of him on overdrive, and I assume this was the message everywhere. I really love our team, and I don't think we've seen the best of them. He's gone back to the "I stake my career on it" kind of rhetoric. It doesn't make me feel like there's much going to happen.
No,
it could be a smokescreen. Could be a smokescreen, but realistically, what could they do?
I mean, really not. I mean, honestly, Bob, I don't know. Just nibble. The joke I've been making is, you know, there's other teams out there that they can go big game fishing and go find a marlin. The Leafs are just basically scraping the barnacles. They just need to find some barnacles that actually taste good with a little garlic.
When you sell your house, there's two things you can do to improve the value of it. One is make some substantial renovations. You know, knock out a wall, you know, put in a driveway. Well, I guess you probably wouldn't put in a driveway. But anyway, you could do like structural things. Or, you know, you can get some nice throw pillows.
Yeah.
and paint the walls white.
Oh, and cook chocolate chip cookies. People seem they like the smell of baked goods. And I hear that helps as well.
That's smart. That's good.
Yeah.
And okay, so the Leafs are kind of approaching this offseason like chocolate chip cookies.
Yeah.
They're going to bake a batch of cookies and invite everybody in preseason.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not super impressed, but at the same time, I understand this is where they're at.
Yeah.
The whole thing with Jared McCann, people are super disappointed. I'm disappointed. I wanted to see what he could have done as a Leaf, but the truth is they felt they needed to protect Justin Hall, and McCann was a guarantee that Hall's name wasn't going to wind up on the chopping block because a right-handed defenseman who's had a lot of success with Jake Muzzin and doesn't make a ton of dough for the next 2 years is something they need right now.
I thought Brian Hayes brought up a good point. What does this say about Liljegren, where they had to protect Hall and they were going to lose, and they knew they were going to lose all these forwards?
What's funny, because around Travis Dermott, the conversation was, you've got Sandin coming, but you haven't heard that. Liljegren clearly is not a great prospect. He might turn into a guy who follows, you know, into the five or six defenseman category. But we were all excited because he was ranked very highly early on in his draft year, fell, and it felt like Dubas had pulled off a miracle getting a guy who, you know, could have gone in the top five and getting him from the mid down of the first round. So it just felt like a steal. Who doesn't love a steal? You know, like the IKEA commercial where the woman thinks she's, you know, ripped them off and she gets in the car and she yells, "Start the car!" Like there was a start the car mania around Liljegren. And you find out, no, actually, that's what he costs. And that's what he's worth.
Yep. By the way, your start the car, you sounded a little bit like Newt from Hercules. hey, Herc! Like, it's got to be louder. Start the car! Start the car!
You're right. I did a bad job.
It's okay.
Oh, well, what are you going to do?
What
are people saying in your world, Matt?
In my world? Well, do you think Kyle Dubas believes what he said on Overdrive and his general messaging? Or is he just doing that because he has to have that PR? Because, you know, just protect his players and all that bullshit. Because you can't be that confident. If you really believe that, that you're that confident in that group, then that screams some level of not enough intellectual flexibility and bordered on arrogance to think, no, this can work. This can work. It's like, really? Where's the evidence?
Arrogant is the magic word. We talked about this during the last pod about how they swore that this group they were going to bring in, the management, that they would not have blue and white disease. And you wonder, does management have blue and white disease? Like, do they somehow think the rules of the NHL don't apply to them? Let's go over this, Matt. So no prospects, no first round draft pick, and no cap flexibility. And you've got long-term deals on a group that's never won a playoff series. How optimistic are Toronto fans that we're still thinking it's not a free fall?
You're right about the blue. Oh God, you're right about the blue and white disease. Like it just, you know, it doesn't. You're right. It doesn't just impact the players. It's impacting everyone around them. There's a reason why we keep using the Overlook Hotel. It just, how do you have this level of confidence? It screams arrogance. Like, no, our plan can work. Our plan will work. It's like, give us that one piece of tangible evidence. You haven't dominated in the regular season until this past year, and we can discuss whatever about the division. And yeah, you lose every time in the playoffs. Where's the evidence?
There are a couple things. Auston Matthews is a legit top 3 to 5 player in the league. He'll be a Hart candidate for the next 5 years. You can see that easily. Nylander has grown into his contract and probably outperforming it now, which is really cool. You've got some decent players. You know, you found some guys like Spezza is a sweet, you know, I'm not ready to commit to a Kerfoot, but on the back end, you know, you're
good defense.
Good defense. And you've got a goalie who looks like he might be pretty good and he's pretty cheap. So there are things that make you a pretty good team, pretty good to good. And the last time I checked, unless you have unbelievable goaltending, they don't hand out the Stanley Cup to teams that are pretty good.
Nope. They don't.
There's watching Tampa Bay basically ragdoll everybody in their path doesn't fill me with confidence that the Leafs are at that level. And to your point about how we're not excited about the draft tonight, we're not excited about the present and we're not excited about the future. Mm-hmm. Whoa.
Yes.
What happened?
I know. Everything was going swimmingly. Remember they had that three-game win streak, three games in a row over Edmonton where they just shut down McDavid. I miss those days, Bob. I miss that feeling of, that this team has finally got it going. And then Matthews and Marner, they don't score. And now here we are.
The loss of Zach Hyman, they've done, like, the Edmonton Oilers are doing Dubas an incredible favor right now because they're about to overpay for Hyman.
Yep.
And no reasonable fan can look at that and say the Leafs should offer that. So they're doing a favor because the Leafs have to divest themselves of a really good and important player, but nobody could say they should, you know, top Edmonton in this case. So it's a favor. The Edmonton Oilers, as they have done so many times before, are bailing another GM out by doing something stupider than anybody else would be willing to do. They are the Steve-O of franchises.
What? That's a good analogy. Do you have one Steve-O stunt that sticks out for you?
I think in the movie when he's dangling over the alligators and he's got the raw chicken in his underwear and he's on a wire hanging over the alligator pit.
Yep, there's that one.
And the alligator's snapping. Because I think it's really bad to fall off of a shopping cart that's moving quickly.
Mm-hmm. That's not good.
Yeah, I think it's worse to be bitten in the groin by an alligator.
I would agree with you, Bob.
So that one stands out.
For me, and that is a good one. If I was trying to do sports radio or I skip Bayless, I would argue with you that that would actually be a delightful thing to have happened to you.
It'd be hard to argue, but okay.
Hard to argue. Hey, Skip could do it. Mine is when he takes a fishing hook and pushes it, pierces through his cheek, and he's the bait, and they go fishing. And they go... and he's like, you know, on a line out in the ocean. Just, oh my God. Like, say what you want. I know some people don't like Jackass, whatever, but in terms of setup, execution, and punchline, man, those guys nailed it.
Okay. It's a bit long in the tooth that we should be trying the merits of Jackass. So let me just say, it's a masterpiece.
Yes.
The show, the movie, the world they created. Spike Jones came out of that environment. It's so funny. Even now, I've been showing it to my daughter, and I still can't help but laugh. Like, you asked about Steve Opitz. We were watching the movie a couple months ago, and when Henry Rollins is driving the off-road vehicle and he goes, "Stop a rock and roll tattoo," and they try to tattoo Steve-O in the back of the off-roading, and the Jeep's bouncing all over the place, they're trying to tattoo a happy face on his back. It's hilarious.
It is. Oh my God. Anyway.
Okay, quick question. Sorry.
Yeah.
We'll get back to the Leafs in a second, but
sure.
Were your friends like wrestling stupid? Cause I had a whole group of friends who were wrestling stupid. And by that, I mean, we'd suplex each other into tables and, you know, just dumb stuff. Did you guys do that? Cause you don't strike me as like wrestling stupid, your crew.
Not as much as you guys. My friend Dave Kennedy didn't appreciate when I Bundy splatted him. And he was sitting on, on a beanbag chair. So this should date it to, this was mid-80s at most. And he didn't know we were in a wrestling match until he got Bundy splatted. So he wasn't so thrilled with that moment of his life.
My best friend and I invented a game called Crush Nuts, and I will just leave it at that.
Men are stupid. Boys are stupid.
Stupid. So stupid. Okay, back to the Leafs. So what does have you excited at this point? Something must.
Honestly, no. I know that's bad pod, but nothing. Like, I meant it when I said after they lost game 7, there's nothing until next year in the playoffs. You know, it's like, hey, the draft, you know, hey, Braden Point and Kucherov, they got selected, in the second or third round and all that kind of stuff. But the Leafs, beyond, like, the only guys that are on this roster that have played, that were taken out of the first, that weren't drafted in the first round. It's like Adam Brooks, Nick Robertson, Pierre Engvall, and someone else. Like, it's just, there's nothing to be excited about this team. I can't get excited about the draft. I can't get excited about free agency. Who the hell are they going to trade? They're about to lose Zach Hyman. Who's going to be the other goalie that they get? Like, I'm sorry. I'd love to be excited. I'm more excited to see what happens with Jack Eichel than anything with the Maple Leafs.
There are 2 points I want to make about the Leafs this summer. You know this. I'm using the pod as my soapbox. Yeah. One, the Leafs, before they commit to anybody long-term, and including Jack Campbell, you can use next year as a tryout year for him if you want. But you have to be sure before you get into another Freddie Anderson situation that that goalie is really going to get the job done. Because you just can't win if they don't. You just can't win if they don't. And once you tie yourself into a longer-term contract, it's kind of your destiny. So that's one. Two, the reason why it's okay to give Jack Campbell a tryout year this year is because this isn't the year. It's not a rebuilding year, but it's a bit of a holding pattern. They could have some success. They could win a round, maybe even two. But a real cup contender is 2 to 4 years away. Two is if they catch some breaks. Four is if, you know, it takes a little bit more time. But it ain't next year. And this goes back. It sounded at the time when I said it, just after the playoffs ended, a little bit kind of knee-jerk or maybe, you know, doomsaying. But think back to what you've just articulated. There's literally nothing about next year that suggests that they're a really good team. Literally nothing. Literally nothing. So how could it be anything but 2 to 4 years away? And fans have to sort of accept that. It's not fun. It's not fun. But it's the same kind of thing like with the Sixers right now in the NBA. Are the Sixers, do you feel like they could be right back there next year? They would have to make a big deal.
Yeah, they would. They'd have to make it. Like, and Ben Simmons is gone. He can't stay there anymore.
Well, here's the thing with the Leafs. They've already said, we're not making that big deal.
Nope, they're not.
It's like if the Sixers are saying, we're running this back, but we still think we're the best team in the East.
Duh.
2 to 4 years away, Matt. 2 to 4 years away, which is why I'd like to see something happen tonight. Because if you could get a really great stud player, maybe in 3 to 4 years, that person's contributing. Maybe you find your Sergachev tonight.
Maybe, but much like, why should I believe they can win a playoff round? Why should I believe they can draft? You know, it's not just Dubas, obviously. It's, you know, it was Lamoriello, it was Burke, it was Nonis,
Mark Hunter.
It was, you know, Mark Hunter. It's all of them. It's every one of them. Boy, I wish I could put all the blame on one. I think probably if I had to pick one, the most would go on Brian Burke. But I have no reason to believe this team can draft well. I have no reason to believe this team can win the playoffs. Like, what? And by the way, Bob, I'm saying this as it's a gorgeous sunny day. I see my gal on the dock, sunning, reading a trashy magazine. I got a glass of slightly overly oaked, but still yummy Chardonnay. And yet I have no faith in this hockey team. None.
Man, I am going to have that Oyster Bay, I think.
Yeah.
Waiter, I'll have what he's having.
Yeah.
You know what just occurred to me while you were talking, and this is so weird. Let's assume that any rational GM would have selected Austin Matthews, so he doesn't count as a draft win. You had a winning lottery ticket, right? But there was no ingenuity behind it. That said, is it possible Dave Nonis and his team, by drafting Nylander where they did, have the best current impact through the draft on the Leafs?
Yes, that's a great point. Yes, right now, the greatest GM in Maple Leafs history in the last 25 years is Dave Nonis. Oh my God, Bob, I know we're joking about it. You're not that far off. Are we?
I'm joking.
Are we really? This is the promo line. This is the line for the Twitter for this. Dave Nonis, best GM the Leafs have had since Cliff Fletcher. First time around Cliff Fletcher.
I really like dealing with him, actually. I found him to be a very decent person.
Mm-hmm.
I felt bad because I ripped him, and I know Burke got really mad at me because I was ripping him. But honestly, towards the end of Notice's tenure, how did you not rip him and be on the air?
Yeah.
But I found him to be really professional, and I quite liked him. And, you know, hockey's really weird, man. GM's a weird job. You know, you're kind of working on your own. You're working within a collective. You know, we just watched the expansion draft, and It was pretty clear the GMs were not going to let Ron Francis do what George McPhee did only a few years ago.
Yep.
There was a lot of strategy that went into making sure the Kraken would be Kraken for a while.
Do you know, like, it's the crazy thing about the expansion draft is usually in, you know, most of our lives, when an expansion team comes in, they're horrible the first year, improved and scrappy the second year, dangerous but miss the playoffs in the third year. And by the fourth year, if things are going well, they make the playoffs. Now, the way it's all set up, you can be, a GM can decide, are we in win now mode? And we don't even have a season ticket base.
It is such a great point that somehow if the Kraken missed the playoffs, it feels like they didn't do a good job.
Yeah, it's true.
They're building a team based on the players that every other team is willing to let go. But to your point, and this goes back to one, I mean, the rules of the expansion draft have also changed based, you know, like the current rules are different than they used to be. But yeah, it is all of that Vegas effect. You know, my impression, look, I don't want to get into the show because I think we all agree that just didn't work. But what really jumped out at me was it felt like nobody wanted to be there.
Yeah.
If there was just a weird thing about, like, around Vegas, I don't know, maybe because it's Vegas, but there was this new, exciting, bold thing happening. It was kind of captured by the spirit of Marc-Andre Fleury, who's a pretty amazing individual. But the team had a face, and that face was a cup winner and a hell of a guy and still in his prime and all of that stuff. And I just, when I watched Seattle, I thought the only person happy to be here is Kevin Weeks.
Oh yeah, Kevin Weeks and Marshawn Lynch. That was basically about it. I didn't even watch the expansion draft because I knew all the picks.
Right.
Yeah. Why am I going to watch it? But if Seattle wanted, they could have taken Tarasenko and Carey Price. And by the way, I totally get why the NHL did this. Do you know what the expansion fee was for the Minnesota Wild when they came to be back in 2000?
No, what was it?
$80 million.
Uh-huh.
Vegas spent $650 million.
Yeah, quite literally, it's a multiple of eight.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you do that, and you know, you do that, and you get that, and that's why these teams are Vegas and Seattle are allowed that opportunity.
That's going to look pretty good when Gary Bettman's contract's up. That's a good number to bring to your renegotiation.
Yeah, it is. It is. But you know me. I franchise values always go up because of the PVR and the value of live TV and all that. But hey, listen, they're back on ESPN. Seattle, $650 million. NHL, good spot. So hey, Bettman, Bettman deserves credit, but I only give commissioners so much credit for when the leagues are doing well. The same way you can be the head of the LCBO and you brag about making a profit. It's a monopoly, and you sell the number one thing people like to buy in booze.
It does help. Hey, I have a crazy hockey thought, which is not... Would you help me workshop a thought?
Sure.
I do this with you sometimes for your opening segment.
And I appreciate it. That's the only thing that stinks, that we're recording this at 2:00 on a Friday and I did the morning show. None of this can I steal for my show. And I steal all the time.
Very Mulaney-esque yet again.
Yeah.
And I steal all the time. Yeah. That wasn't a good Mulaney. You say it just like that out of my system.
Yeah,
I did William Shatner for some reason.
You did do. Let's see. Now I'll get into a second. Sometimes I need to rev up my John Mulaney.
Okay, so here's my crazy thought. I was thinking about how would the NHL be better if restricted free agency went away and the entry-level contract went for 4 years and then they went straight to UFA? Here's what I'm thinking. Sometimes it's hard to know how good a player really is when their RFA number comes up, and teams afraid to lose these guys or piss them off wind up committing, a la Mitch Marner, to too much cash out of the gate. Or players get pissed off because they feel like, you know, I deserve more than I'm getting. And then the bridge deal always seems to leave a lot of gaps. But in terms of, like, how do you build a winner? How do you build a winner? Well, you need those young guys, those young players that can contribute on that entry level. And because the Leafs don't have that, we've seen you can't rely on people making big money. You need somebody who contributes who's making small money. So that extra year of entry level, team controlled, will probably make a lot of team, will be valuable for a lot of teams.
Yeah.
But here's the other thing, and this is the more important point. Zach Hyman is how old?
29.
We're talking about him like he's already too old, or that he might have 1 or 2 years left in him. Because we still have this idea that somehow hockey players, like in the past, we would have said he's in his prime. John Tavares, you know, 10, 20 years ago, we would have said that guy's in his prime when he signed the UFA deal with Toronto.
Yes.
But what we're learning more and more is that's not true. The prime is really somewhere between 23 and about 28. And so the UFA years are built like they start too late. They start too late to really be worth the price tags that these guys command. And that if you really, really wanted to build a winner, and you could do it through free agency, and I'll explain in a second why this is more exciting, why would you spend a ton of money, like a possible 7-8 year deal, on somebody who may give you 2 or 3 good years? We're having this conversation now with Morgan Riley. His number's coming up, and we're all, the biggest argument for not signing him is the deal would be too long, he won't be worth it.
Yeah.
It's always the conversation. So by doing 4 years of entry level and then straight to UFA, what you're really doing is you're making the best players available when they still have the most to give. And if that's the case, then wouldn't that possibly make bidding for these guys more attractive? Because one of the problems we have with the UFA year, and let's take the hockey propensity for not wanting to leave your safe environment out, you know, like the guys don't like to move around too much. It's different than basketball that way. But if you're a team, I'm more willing to extend myself financially on a gamble if I think I'm getting more good years from this guy.
Right. Yeah.
So all of a sudden, you know, you can't build through, you know, free agency. This is what we've always been told, because players either stay or they're not worth the money they're getting. But if they were younger, more players would be worth the money they're getting, which means there would be more player movement because there would be more competition. And the thing that kills the league in terms of interest, and this is where the NBA thrives, is that good players move. So what you get in my system, where it's 4 years of entry level going straight to UFA, is you get the team is better able to assess young talent and get more out of them at a cap-friendly number for longer. And then secondly, a greater opportunity to get better players while they're still good.
Right. I gotcha.
And what the players get is they get a big payday earlier and a better shot at a second big contract.
Yeah. Yeah. Versus like what Braden Point got in, you know, his RFA deal, which is coming up soon, which is coming up after this year. I like this for a couple reasons. One, because it gets rid of the RFA thing, which just always confuses me. I'm like, oh, he's a free agent? Yeah, but he's a restricted free agent. Okay, thanks. That doesn't help me at all. Just, is he free or not? So we get rid of all that gobbledygook. I'm down with that. Also, if it creates more competition, and yeah, I think, yeah, maybe we quibble four. I'm sure the owners would ask for 5 years. But if there's a way where you just go from you're with the team, there's a certain amount of years, then you're a unrestricted free agent, and we cut out the middleman. I'm down. You sold me on it. Works for me. Okay,
cool. What I find with the Leafs, and this is the weirdness of the conversation, is we talk about Tavares now entering the downside of his contract. And we can't sign Hyman because it's never going to be worth it in the long run. And Morgan Riley, maybe you got to trade him now because he's going to be on the downside of his deal soon. None of these guys are old.
No.
None of them are old. You're not talking about Chris Chelios here. You're not talking about taking a gamble on a guy who's 34 years old. We used to think of them all in the prime of their career. And now we think of them as, do I dare tether my hopes to these guys? Because they're a couple hits away from being old men.
Well, I think part of it also is when we see like 8-year deal for Hyman, we don't think of the first 3 years of what that deal will mean for Edmonton. We're focused on years 6, 7, 8. When Hyman will be 35 years old.
Yeah, we think of Milan Lucic and how, you know, these guys, you know, they have something to offer when they sign, but it's not long until they don't.
Yeah.
It's a weird situation. And I guess, like, I wish free agency was more interesting because in theory, like, all these one-in-one deals they sign in the NBA, holy shit. Like, Kawhi could leave the Clippers.
He could.
He could sit out the whole year, which I know doesn't sound like Kawhi, but he could sit out the whole year and then sign with somebody new and use this year basically to rest himself the way Kevin Durant did. And some team could sign him for a ton of dough, like a Miami or whatever, and you're getting a, you know, he gets paid an enormous amount of cash and the new team gets arrested Kawhi. So what the hell do the Clippers do? Here's the thing, Matt, and I'm sure the teams hate this, but if you're a fan, you'll love it. Because confusion equals intrigue. Intrigue equals interest. The NBA has really allowed its owners to be grist for the mill by forcing them to make tough decisions. Hockey guys need to make some tougher decisions.
Oh, I've always said, like, you know, it's so much easier being an NHL GM than an NBA one because of that. And by the way, sometimes I get tired of it. Like, this sort of dovetails nicely into the Giannis conversation. Sometimes I just, like, can everyone just be happy and stay where you are? Because as a fan, if I'm led to believe, and if every major star every night just got a stink face on, it kind of hurts my view and experience.
You know, I've thought about Giannis, but I talked a lot about free agency. So why don't I shut up and you do the Giannis thing that you want to do?
Well, first, I quickly want to mention, speaking of free agents, if you are a free agent out there, at some point, you're going to need a lawyer. And if you do need one, and you will, how about our lawyer, the sponsor of our podcast? His name is Jeff Pollock. He's a fantastic lawyer, small, little, independent family thing. I shouldn't say it's all family. There's people that work there that aren't his direct family. But it feels like it. The attention, the care will always be there. And boom, now you got your lawyer stuff all figured out. And you can move on with your life and drink Castle Rock Chardonnay in the middle of the day. But if you need the lawyer, jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. JeffPollock.com. The phone number is 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088. So, Bob, let's, with Giannis, first on the small picture, 17 of 19 free throws in game six. Holy shit.
It was thrilling as he kept, I was rooting for Phoenix, but I was happy to see Milwaukee win. And after a while, you just had to cheer for the excellence of the performance. It's not like Chris Paul was bad in that deciding game six. He was actually really good. Yep. But what you got from Giannis was history. And history. At a certain point, you kind of just have to say, let history happen. And all the free throws were, you know what I loved about that, Maddie? Because he was told he couldn't do it, it was the perfect way to sail off into the sunset on the year.
It was. It was. And there is nothing more shaming than being alone at the free throw line, a la Nick Anderson in an NBA Finals game, and not hitting your shots. And you know what you do then? You take outside jumpers. You take quick shots. You don't demand the ball in the post because you're afraid you're going to get fouled. Giannis was like, nope, I don't care. I'm going to attack. And Bob, the interesting thing is, I was like you. I was rooting for Phoenix early on. But the moment that Giannis blocked Ayton in game four, I switched. I'm like, nope, no, we are seeing something in Giannis. We are seeing like he had a performance that's as good as anything ever done by LeBron, by Jordan, by Jerry West, by Elgin Baylor, Jerry West. You name the player. You can argue what Giannis did in game six is as good as anything we have ever seen in an NBA Finals.
If he had been really good, but not, you know, historic the way he was, we might think of this as a Dirk Nowitzki-type title.
Yeah.
It's a great player and, ironically, European as well. But it's a great player who got his just dessert and was an important part of a win. And we'll think of him as one of history's all-time players. But because he did it the way he did it, it's like, oh, he's our Shaq.
Yeah.
He's our Shaquille O'Neal, and he's not somebody who belongs in the top 30. He's someone who might belong in the top 10 all time. And he'll always be in that conversation based on what he just did. And he might solidify that if he does it again.
Is he about to become the most popular athlete in all of North America? Because he represents so many things we love. Struggle. Stayed with the team. An underdog story in the sense he started playing basketball late, grew up poor in Greece. He came out and said it. I didn't want to join a super team. I didn't want to do that. I could have. I could have been Durant or Harden or Anthony Davis. I'm like, no, I'm going to do it my way on this team I'm loyal to, and I am loyal to these players here around me. He is the anti-Durant.
Let me ask you, yeah. You threw it as a question. Do you think he's about to become the most popular athlete?
Yep, I do. I think everything is set up. Part of it is LeBron, he's going to retire soon. I know we say that every year. Eventually him and Tom Brady at 70 will both retire. But Giannis is the counterbalance to all the things that a lot of people, not all, but a lot of people in the NBA, a lot of fans don't like. And he's young, and his conversation when he was talking about, finding humility and fighting against the ego, like just everything about him scratches all of our itches as a classic sports fan. And he's the easiest thing to market right now.
I wish that were true, but I got to disagree.
Go.
I think in the moment we love that, and he'll always be loved as an individual, but there's something about, this is particularly true of the American market. They love super teams. And I don't think the Bucks are one. I think they would have lost this year to the Nets if they hadn't been decimated by injury.
True, they would have.
So I don't think the path for them getting back to this spot is, impossible, but I don't think it's likely. What I do think is likely is that Brooklyn will win next year. And then we'll forget. I think about players like Russell Wilson. Remember when Russell Wilson won a Super Bowl and it was like, this is his league to inherit?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, because he didn't win again.
If it's a good point with Russell Wilson, and the Brooklyn shadow is always going to be looming, but we still don't know, will these guys ever be healthy? Will they ever be healthy together at the same time? We have no idea, but I just think there's nothing easier to market than Giannis. Okay, let me ask you this. Was anyone angry? Like, if the Nets had won the title, most of us would have had a goddamn stink face on our face seeing them celebrate. Was like, what parts of America was upset that Giannis won a title?
I none. And I can't disagree about Giannis. I think I don't agree with you, because the stink face that you say that people would have worn for Brooklyn, mm-hmm, is the same one that people wore for Miami. That went away. They were the evil empire, Miami, but now we remember them fondly. Do you think poorly of Chris Bosh or Dwayne Wade? People loved Dwayne Wade. He was a villain in the moment, but he became a winner and a multiple winner. And so we remember him differently.
I would say the difference is that at least with Miami, these were free agents all going together. Harden forcing his way out of town. Kyrie multiple times forcing his way out of really cool situations. So I think the villainous side of the Nets was higher than the Miami Heat. I think the highest form of villainy was Kevin Durant going to Golden State, but it might now be James Harden, what he did to the Houston Rockets.
So let me rephrase this, because you make a really great point. But now here's what I wonder. Does the face of a league have to be on the best team?
It's a good question. In basketball, certainly more so than in other sports.
Like, let's think about who's been the face of the league in basketball.
LeBron.
Right, LeBron. But he won four titles.
Yeah. He won four titles. He went to a lot of finals.
And he became the face of the league really after Miami.
I think he became the face of the league. I think his 48-point game against Detroit, like in 07-08, the Eastern Conference Finals, that got them to the finals. And then they got, just ragdolled by the Spurs. But, I mean, whatever. We're quibbling a little
bit. We're quibbling. Yeah. But yeah. MJ was on the best team. Kobe's Lakers were the best team two separate times. LeBron was often on the best team, or certainly, the one or two, three best teams. So that's kind of my problem with Giannis, is I don't know if the Bucks are going to be around long enough for him to ascend to that point. I see him more like I see Dirk.
But when Dirk won the title, Dirk was older. Like, Giannis is 26, 27. Giannis just went up a notch in terms of what he can do. And by the way, I say all of this with acknowledging if Brooklyn is fully healthy with those three guys, they win the title. But whether they will be fully healthy, or if Kyrie decides he needs to leave for a couple weeks, you know, in the third round of the NBA playoffs, who knows? You know, and Durant with that injury. At the very least, we know Middleton, Holiday, and Giannis, they're not, you know, this is mid to late 20s. And, you know, what Giannis did in the finals, that's something that other players may flock to.
They might, but here's what I'm thinking now. I'm going to refine this idea of the best.
Yeah.
The face of the league has to be on the best team. Yeah. Not only does he have to be on the best team, he has to be the reason they're the best team. And because I was thinking while you were talking, like, Phoenix is a young club. They got a good coach. They got some great young players. Chris Paul will go away. That'll be an issue. But you got Booker and Ayton to build around. And if they all of a sudden became the best team, would Devin Booker be the face of the league? And I thought, no, because he's not far and away that much better than DeAndre Ayton. It's not like Michael and the Jordanaires. It's not like Kobe and whoever else you put him next to. It's almost like you have to be on the best team. And because it's basketball, like LeBron, you have to be the reason you're the winner.
Like Giannis in these playoffs.
So he could be that if this team was good enough to keep getting back there, which I don't think they are.
I think they can. I think the only thing that can stop them is if Brooklyn's three are fully healthy. But let me ask you this, I agree with you. The Brooklyn Nets, healthy, best team in the East. We're not going to argue that. Who's easier to market today than Giannis? Like, I throw out Bob. We've started the Macko and Kaz marketing company. And I'm like, Bob, I think we should sign up Giannis. Can you come up with one person that you think, oh, this guy's even easier to sell?
Luka Doncic.
Diva?
Oh, wait. You mean now or in the future?
Right, today. Today. Because when I think of Luka, Diva, a lot of coaches being let go. Porzingis isn't happy with him. Bitches and complaints to the officials. I think led the league in technicals. Does a lot of complaining.
Yeah, I agree with all that. But I also think that he has the best shot to be the next great player.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, you know, he comes to mind. Trae Young's interesting.
Trae Young, good. Trae Young, that's a good one because he's got a little Reggie Miller villain in him.
Yeah, he's got an angle.
Yep.
And he's hated in New York, which means he's talked about in New York.
Exactly. And he's a fun villain. Like, there are two types of, like, Harden is, or and Durant or whatever, Kyrie, like, those guys, they're not joyful villains. They're villains that take to Twitter to yell at you on an egg. Like, Trae Young seems like a fun villain.
I remember hearing back in the day that Phil Esposito didn't want to be traded to the Rangers because he hated the Rangers. Mm-hmm. And you would never hear players talk that way now. I can't go to that team. I hate that team. Because players don't hate other teams anymore. Yeah. They're all union brothers and, you know, they're all individual businesses. There's a million reasons why. But Trae Young feels like a throwback in the sense that if you're a market, you hate him. And he just might hate you right back. I love that. I love that. I think it's for fun. I think it's for fun. But that old-timey feeling of a player that loves to take your heart. We don't have enough of that anymore. So Trae Young is a possibility. I'm really excited by Ja Morant, but I don't know what's going to come of him.
Yeah.
But he feels like he could be like a Grant Hill. Mm-hmm. Like just kind of like this outstanding citizen who's a superior player. And Memphis feels like an up-and-coming team. There's a version of the NBA where in 5 years, Memphis is a champion. So, but to your point about Giannis, he does have everything. I love him. You love him. Kids love him. Everybody loves him.
Everyone loves him. And also, one final thought, then if we want, we can move on to the interesting Buffalo Bills. But I loved when Giannis took to the mic afterwards and said, I could have gone to a super team. I didn't want to. I wanted to do it here. Like, he took shots. Like, those were, he's like, I could have gone the easier way. But he took shots. Veiled, intended, unintended, who knows? But he's like, hey, Durant and Harden and all these play and Anthony Davis, just to let you know, I did this. I did it by staying here. And that's something you can sell.
And he's got his moment, but I think it will hurt him in the long run. Because he'll be the Dirk, but he could have been the Shaq. If he'd gone to a super team, we'd remember him as Shaq.
Ah, well, we'll see. We're going to disagree on this one. I can't wait 7 years from now when I'm proven correct. Of course, we'll forget. 2 weeks from now, we'll forget what this was. So it doesn't really matter.
I don't even remember what we talked about in the first half hour.
I don't know. I think about Zach Hyman returning on a team-friendly deal. Who knows what we talked about?
Hey, why don't we do some quick non-sports?
Sure, go.
You know what I was thinking about? I often come across on our pod as this rebellious figure who's anti-establishment.
Yeah.
And you feel like somebody who's more establishment.
Absolutely.
But in reality, I think I might be more conservative than you are.
Really?
Yeah. You know, which one of us is the one who married his girlfriend and started the conventional family?
You.
Right? You chose to say, we don't need to be married. We're in love. We'll do it the way we want. So I went to tradition. You're doing your own path, right?
Yep.
We both have family businesses, right? And it would be easy to say, oh, Matt, well, your family business, your family is in the financial industry, and that's very conservative.
Yep.
But you're the black sheep.
That's right.
I come from rock and roll. My dad partied with Led Zeppelin. But I went into the family business. So what's more conservative? Oh. Going into the family business of a non-traditional enterprise or being the black sheep and turning your back on convention?
I did. I was a messenger for 2 years at WD Latimer. And whenever they said, hey, Matt, do you want us to teach you anything about the company? I said, no. I'm like, I don't want to learn.
Hey, now, Matt, talk about your time at Latimer, because I love these stories.
Oh, like all I wanted to do was be the best ever messenger. But I wore the same tie every day. The tie was owned by my uncle Court, who was the president of the company for ages. It was about like 6 to 7 inches long from the 70s, this bright maroon tie. And I just wore it every single day without fail. I would run really fast, get everything done. So then I would have all this spare time. And you know what I would do, Bob? I would sit and read Russian literature. That's what I did with my free time when I was ignoring learning how to work in the corporate world.
I love it. You know what it reminds me of while you were talking? You got a bit of Jimmy McGill in you, in the sense that like your family were like running the shop and you were happy in the mailroom.
Yep.
So the Matt Cause work story is Better Call Matt.
Yeah.
You know, on the other hand, I did the very conventional thing. My dad was in radio. I went into radio.
Yeah.
Macko and Son.
Yeah, I love this. So I'm the free freak out, free thinking, rebellious hippie, and you're the Johnny Unitas haircut, buttoned up tie guy.
Set your watch by that, Bob Mackwitz. I don't really drink. How about you?
Well, I'm just finishing my second glass of Chardonnay.
And, you know, you've been an independent contractor for most of your life.
That's right.
Right? Yep. Whereas I work for Apple.
Do you have benefits?
No.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, wow. But yeah, you're with Apple.
I work for the biggest company in the world, whereas you work for Matt Cause Inc. You're independent.
Yeah, that's true. You do work for Apple. My God, you're almost like Jeff Bezos is. Oh no, he's not. He's Amazon. Who's ahead of Bell now or Apple now? Who's ahead of Apple? Do we know?
Cook. It's Tim Cook. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't know.
Yeah, we know. It's on his office door.
Oh, okay. Hi, Tim. If you're listening, I'm sure you're doing a fabulous job.
So anyway, I'm going to continue to explore this because the other day I was just thinking about. Wait a minute. I'm way more conservative than Matt is.
You know, when you break it down like that, Bob, you make a good point.
You know, I'm just a cardigan. Mm-hmm. You know, you're a sports jacket and I'm a cardigan.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, right now I'm a bathing suit. Yeah, the Bills. Well, the main thing I want to talk about the Bills is last year during COVID, every player was in it together. Guys, we gotta make sure we're not partying. Don't be with Harden or Kyrie. And everyone's got to do their part so we don't contract COVID, so we can help the team. So there was a sense of unity last year in the NFL to try to get through the season. This year, you've got two members of the Buffalo Bills saying, we're not going to take the vaccine. And then you got another player going to Twitter saying, wait a minute, this is ridiculous. Doctors all around the world have created something to protect us. And why are we questioning it? There is going to be not just the Bills. I bring them up because they're your team. There is going to be schisms. There's going to be some really fascinating locker room tension because of vaccines.
It's a great point. I feel like it's 52 minutes in and this could be a whole hour conversation.
Yeah, it's
just
true.
Just as Trump polarized rooms that we didn't necessarily know from the outside, but we find out now through reporting that there was a lot of, around the 2020 election, there was a lot of rooms that got split. We've all, with COVID, sort of been in the same boat together in the sense that there were rules and, you know, most people just followed them. Yeah. And if you didn't follow them, you broke the rules and you kind of stood out, you know. But now we've got to try to find a way to integrate everybody back together. Kind of on their own recognizance. You know, you didn't have to deal with anybody you didn't agree with before because you were at home.
Yeah.
But now you got to go to a workplace with people who may not believe in vaccines.
And imagine that in the locker room where it's so much more, I mean, it's a more intimate, important environment. Like, it's more important that everyone's on the same side. Like, in my job or your job, it doesn't, like, you know, it. You want to be on the same side, but the teamwork, the importance of teamwork is nowhere near as important as it is with what goes on in an NFL locker room.
I think it would be really hard to be a coach in this environment because you're going to have players who are just not going to like each other. That's probably always true. In fact, it's definitely always true. But these aren't like, you know, inner room squabbles, you know, like, I wonder if it's going to just really bifurcate. It's going to be like a prison yard where you just have like different groups that only hang together. And then every once in a while, you send someone over to shiv somebody else.
This time the shiv is a syringe with a vaccine.
That's dark but funny. That's very quick that you came up with that.
Yeah.
You know, Eric Clapton gets in trouble on Twitter because he says he's not going to play places that require vaccination, proof of vaccination.
Yep.
Somebody in sports is going to make a similar statement. Somebody of real profile, and all hell will break loose.
Well, what happens here? They just delete DeAndre Hopkins. You know, basically said I was pissed off, saying I can't believe the NFL is making us do this. It's making me question whether or not I want to be in the game. He then deleted it. Leonard Fournette, similar thing. He deleted it. I mean, there is so many deletes going on Twitter. It's like, you know, it's like when you're drunk and you're going to tell people what you really think about religion. You know, it always ends up with you deleting a tweet. We're seeing it now. I just wonder what this does in some locker rooms, because hell, we don't even know if LeBron got the vaccine. He was cagey about it as well. It's such a fascinating dynamic that, is going to play out. It feels like it's playing out in the NFL. Like, we haven't seen this in baseball. We haven't seen this in hockey. This feels like a real football thing that's going on.
It's a great point. And we're not as out of this as we have tried to feel like we are. The numbers, I was just on a call today with my LA group, and they were saying how in areas of Los Angeles, they're experiencing February numbers for COVID spread. It's clearly the Delta variant is way more contagious. Plus, now you're dealing with people who are, like, with the lifting of the restrictions, people who are vaxxed are experiencing it one way, but people who aren't vaxxed are experiencing a much more, you know, liberally organized situation. So I guess Delta is just rifling through people. Point being, don't think we're as out of this as we think we are and we'd like to be. And it's like the Titanic heading for the iceberg of the start of NFL season. That's a fascinating point, Matt. I really hadn't thought of that, but that's really interesting.
Unfortunately, we're out of time. We could have got into if the NFL and COVID is like Titanic, who's Billy Zane? We'll have to save that for another day. Again, the true
wait
hero.
Wait a minute. Clearly, Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, God. He's a Debbie. God, the Aaron Rodgers drama. Jesus Christ. That's a whole one in and of itself.
Bad guy who's super good looking, who you kind of like anyway, and maybe even more because he's the bad guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's becoming the bad guy. It's true. I have a child. When he's holding the kid.
I was going with Razor Ramon with, I'm the bad guy.
Yo. Chico.
Wait. Give it to me, Matt. Give it to me one time. You made me laugh. The doink thing.
Yo. Doink. Clown. I got the gold. I got the gold around my hand. I got the gold around my neck. Now I got the gold around my waist.
I can't tell you, Matt. Well, I can't tell you. You were there. But how many times you made me laugh at that line? Yo, doink. Clown. So there it is.
Goodbye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.